with him, that was a judgment as an observer of Question Time. And it wasn't a news story, it was a comment piece that he wasn't happy with. And considering that I ended up working for him in the 96 election campaign, that appointment was made before he realised it. Oh. Because he always remembered that report, and I don't think he ever forgave me for it. So the other kind of anecdotes with the structure of the building at the time, to get from the Senate side to the rep side at that top level, the building was so small, everyone was crowded. There were some House of Reps politicians on the top floor on the rep side, but the press gallery was spread over two sides of Parliament. And to get from one side to the other, there was basically a walkway across the roof of Parliament House. I suspect it would still be there, and I hope they've preserved it, because it was how we got from, when I was working at AAP, covering the Senate late at night, in the middle of Canberra's winter, walking across that walkway in the freezing cold to get to the chamber to report the Senate. And the same as on working in Radio Alley on reps on Senate side, getting across to reps, we would often use that. But of course, we could. There were two lifts, one in each building, and you could use the lifts, but they were a bit slow. And I was terribly fit in those days. I always used the stairs. Another. It's one thing about having a competitive nature. With radio, a lot of the press conferences were held down in the bowels of the rep side, the bottom floor under where the treasurer's office was, I think, somewhere around there from vague recollections. So radio journalists at those press conferences would be always watching their clocks, because they would be racing each other back to be the first to get their story into the news bulletin, or making sure that the others didn't get their story into the news bulletin. And I was quite fit, so I would run back across to the Senate side and run up the stairs. The stairs ran around the lift, and if you do a tour of Parliament House, you can see how the stairs run around the lift. And I would push the buttons on the lift to stop the lift on the way up that the other journalists were in. And so on my way up the stairs, I would hear the lift stop and the doors open and a FU Cartwright coming up the stairwell because I'd stopped the lift on the way up, and I'd run to the top of the stairs to get my story in first. I don't think I ever beat anyone to air that way, but I certainly made their job a little bit harder.
Mm-hmm. Gee, was that top area used for in other ways as well, like in better weather in summer when it...
No, there was only offices there. There was nothing else there. The offices overlooked the roof.
But I mean the walkway that you were...
The walkway was about as wide as one person.
Yeah, okay. Right.
It was... Everything was very rudimentary. Mm.
Now, you mentioned to me before the interview last time an anecdote you had about Barry Jones in radio.
Oh, in the Radio Alley, yes, sorry. the office being so small, the 2GB office being so small. Now, that's being renovated, and I do hope they keep it exactly the same as it was, just to show how difficult it was to actually work there. It was so small that two sides of the office had a desk that wasn't terribly wide, maybe 18 inches wide, across two walls that we used, all three of us used. If the three of us were sitting at that desk at the same time, we couldn't move the chairs. That's how small the office was. And then on the other wall were two recording booths. You needed two booths because we were doing news and current affairs. So it was quite a task working for Macquarie Radio at that time. And those were the booths where we also brought the politicians in for interviews. And the more rotund politicians, such as Barry Jones, I can recall almost levering him into that booth. It was so, so tight and very uncomfortable. But I'm sure, I don't recall the ABC booths at the time, the other booths, but I'm pretty sure they were all quite small.
Now, is there any other memories of the press gallery period that are worth sharing?
Probably. Try a few names to get me moving.
Well, what about Bob Hawke, for instance? Did you have any contact with him as Prime Minister?
Yes, a lot.
I ask because we've got the Australian Prime Minister's Centre here, and yes, we're always interested in learning more about the Prime Ministers.
Yes, I was there where he learnt to cry on demand when the microphones were there. We did a lot of press conferences in the anteroom near the Prime Minister's office. And the way the Prime Minister's office is set up now is the way Bob Hawke had it, not the way Malcolm Fraser had it. And we would come in to that press conference and all set up. It was very small, and so for radio journos, your arms would get very tired holding up the microphones. But we would have to be in close, and we'd all be set up when the Prime Minister came in through the walkway there. The other thing we used to be able to do at Old Parliament House is they couldn't escape. There were four doors that they came out of that we could catch them. There was the front door and the steps, of course. There was the Senate and Reps doors, and there was a back door to the Prime Minister's office. And in a really big story, the journalists would actually share the information, and they still do this now when required and when possible. The TVs would be split and spread around the different entrances, and as would the radio, so we would share the tapes after that just to try to catch the people coming and going. And, so you couldn't escape the media, whereas now the media can't get in to the car parks underneath. And so all they get is the pictures of them driving out.
That remark you made about Bob Hawke crying on demand, naturally I'm going to ask, was that your genuine feeling as a journalist?
There was a fair amount of cynicism about it. Yes, he was genuinely concerned, and he was genuinely upset the first couple of times. There was one issue where his daughter was involved, and he's the first of the new age guys who are comfortable, or public new age guys who are comfortable crying on camera. It seems to be accepted now. It just seemed to happen a little too often after that on critical issues, but it got the point across. Good luck to him.
I guess I'm trying to work it out, you were still in journalism when Keating was Prime Minister too?
That was when I came back and was working at the new Parliament House.
So you've had experience of two Prime Ministers as a journalist. Did you gain any insights into character or personality, do you think, of Hawke and Keating?
Both of them were very good at convincing the journalists that they liked them and making the journalists feel that they were special. Perhaps it's my working class background. I was totally cynical of it all. And it's also possible because I wasn't in part of the inner sanctum of the special journos who had special treatment. But I also know, and I had also seen each of them when journalists weren't around say pretty terrible things about journalists and how they didn't like them. But they were able to build a strong and usually trusting working relationship with journalists. One thing Paul Keating did when he was first a backbencher, he went up to, and I heard this after I got to know some of the older journos when I first started, as a backbencher, he was planning his move to the top job. He introduced himself to the press gallery as a new politician and he would visit the press gallery and built up strong working relationships, particularly with one young, at the time, Paul Kelly, who was one of them, and the general ones as well, but I think Paul Kelly was his closest confidant. And that would have been a case of where that appropriate working relationship is, where there's total trust both ways and you stretch that trust from time to time, but you never break it. And and that was why the senior journalists like Oakes and Paul Kelly could write really incisive, thoughtful pieces without giving away their sources and without saying anything their sources didn't want them to say, but also using that information, knowing that they were being manipulated, and using it to inform their judgment. And that's the way it should work.
Was there a political bias among journalists, generally speaking?
Not intentionally, but what I don't understand is it still seems to be there now, even though in those days we were told that the reason that most journalists were supportive of the Labor Party was because of the Whitlam years and the anti-Vietnam movement. And some of the more conservative, the more right-wing Labor politicians might have joined the less conservative side of the Liberal Party when they were at university, but they were influenced by the Vietnam War and issues at the time and ended up becoming Labor. And that would have influenced journalists' thinking as well. But I still see a general... It is a bias towards Labor thinking and Labor beliefs, but it's sort of more centre-left. It's not loopy left. And it's, you've got your some loopy left and some loopy right, obviously. But with good journalists, and I think most journalists, you can't tell when they report it. Getting a good story from the conservative side of politics accepted by the journalists takes a little more effort than from the left side of politics. But my argument then has been, especially when I was working in politics, is, well, it's just like being female. You've got to be a bit better to get your story up. And even if a journalist doesn't agree with you, if they like you as a person, even in spite of being conservative, if they like the politician is honest about their own beliefs and fair in their dealing with journalists, they will get a fair go in the media.
To what extent did you find editorial influence exerted? Did that happen at all with your political reporting?
No. No, I don't, certainly not with radio. It was intimated a couple of times when I was like a brand new journalist working at The Australian, that once or twice I actually did a proper, real political story. There was some influence on that. But I think that was more because I was a brand new journalist, and my job wasn't reporting politics those 6 months I was at The Australian. It was reporting local real estate stories and doing feature stories, which was a great thing to do. So I didn't see any political influence or direction in my stories at all. There would be feedback if I had, I might have been checking the facts, people checking that I had my facts right. I'd like to think I always did, although I was always pretty keen to get a breaking story up, so I might have cut corners, but I don't recall doing it. It's one of those things you don't like to think about, but I certainly didn't have any editorial comment or influence in the stories I was doing, no.
Now, when this building ceased to be the National Parliament in 1988, what was your position then? What were you?
I was in Adelaide. And one of the things I hate doing is packing boxes and unpacking boxes and moving house. So I left 6 months before they moved out of the building, and came back after they were in the building in 1990. I did cover in May 88 the opening of the new Parliament House, but we were still reporting from here. And once again, that showed the competitive nature. I was working for radio, and I ran all the way from new Parliament House to old Parliament House to get my story up first. Tried not to be puffed out, but it was downhill, and I was very fit in those days. So, yes, I was here for the official opening, but not the actual working press gallery.
And who were you reporting for at that time?
2GB. I was still with Macquarie Radio Network. It was then. It was national network. Mm.
And why did you go to Adelaide? Did you do
one that? Day I was in the corridor, and Peter Harvey from Channel 9 came up to me and said, "Oh, Cheryl, do you want to go to Adelaide and work for us and cover state politics?" Well, yeah. So I packed up and went to Adelaide to learn how to do TV. I don't think I was ever a great TV reporter because I didn't have a mentor in TV. I didn't have anybody coaching me. And because I was from Canberra, I was pretty forthright. I think they were all too scared to tell me what I was doing wrong. So I still broke stories. I broke lots of stories when I was in Adelaide. But I don't think the reporting style was okay. But I was in my early 30s by then, and I think I had probably the reporting style of someone in their 20s rather than someone who was actually sort of more mature. On the other hand, it was Adelaide, and it sort of fitted into the Adelaide scene anyway.
So now that was Channel 9?
That was Channel 9 in Adelaide, yes.
Mm. And state politics?
I did state politics. I covered the election campaign. Which election? 1989 election campaign. Andrew Peacock was the leader.
Oh, yeah.
And so when they came to Adelaide, quite often Channel 9 didn't send a federal reporter. Or if they did, I managed to get a gig anyway. Maybe I was just doing it for our local scene, but I was certainly trying to aim it for national. Maybe I was doing the second story instead of the main story for the federal campaign, but I certainly covered the federal campaign when it came to Adelaide. And I do recall one time Andrew Peacock announcing a literacy or education policy in a library, and his minders hadn't noticed that he was standing under the fiction sign, so we managed to get that on Channel 9. You've just got to be so, so careful.
Can we continue chronologically with how you returned to Canberra and what you did on return?
Yes, I came back to Canberra. I was spent 2.5 years in Adelaide. And I came back to Canberra for Channel 7. I think I approached them. I think I was missing federal politics. I approached them and said if anything came up, I'd be interested. And the number 3 position in a 3-person bureau at Channel 7, federal politics, came up. So I moved back to Canberra. That was what we called the doorstop dolly job. So you're on the doors, new Parliament House, first thing in the morning, with all the early start. I think there might have been some afternoon newspapers then, but radio and TV, you start on the doors at about 7 o'clock, waiting, catching politicians on their way into the building, and putting eyeliner on at 6 o'clock in the morning, 5:30 in the morning, was no fun at all. I'm not a morning person, and we had a pretty good rapport on the doors where some of the cameramen shot the headshots and the grabs, and the other cameramen were getting the cutaways, and they were shared amongst the TV bureaus. And if we had a particular story we were running, we'd ask the question, or the story of the day, usually from the Financial Review or one of the other major papers, we would try to get grabs for the story of the day as it started out, because I had to do a story for the 11 a.m. news at the time. And my hope at the time was that I would have the same role that I had when I was the number two person in a three-person bureau with radio, that I would get to go out and get stories. Unfortunately, I tried to do that, but I was told that seeing I was only the number three person, I had to stay behind and answer phones and do the less interesting things and follow up things for the other journalists. So it wasn't as much fun as it might have been. It certainly wasn't intellectually demanding. But, hey, TV's fun. It was a really, really good experience.
Where were you based? Where was your office?
In the Bureau of Parliament House in, Channel 7 Bureau of Parliament House.
Can we talk about the how did the new conditions compare to the...
It was harder to break stories. It was harder to get stories. In fact, when I was working in Adelaide, that was when the Andrew Peacock coup against John Howard occurred in the new building, when the building was brand new. And I said at the time, even though I was in Adelaide, that could never have happened in the old Parliament House because the building was so small you'd see who was meeting whom. And that, I think that's changed a little now because people are more comfortable in the building and it has a few more skeletons, it has a bit more of a character. But then, it was a brand new building. It felt new. It was difficult to find your way. You couldn't just go for a wander around the building and sniff out stories. You had to actually have something in mind and knock on doors. And then when you knock on the door of a backbencher, they've got a reception area. So if they don't want to see you, they don't see you. It's a lot harder to break stories. And I think it's actually even harder now because there's more outlets because of new media with the internet and fewer journalists. So it's a lot harder to break stories that aren't just given. You know, there's always been the calculated leak to break a story and get it into the a particular paper or papers to gauge attitude to it. But, it's a lot harder to do now, get stories that people don't want out.
Now, how long were you with Channel 7? And
Only about 18 months.
So now we're, in mid-93?
91.
Ah, okay.
I left there, yeah. They decided I wasn't good enough. Right. So... I often joke that I was replaced by a 22-year-old blonde, but that 22-year-old blonde, who wasn't a political reporter at the time, was a very, very talented young girl, and she's now the editor of the Women's Weekly. Brilliant, brilliant girl. So it was the right choice on their part. I'd run my race.
How did they explain it to you?
Oh, very rudely. That's the way they operate. We don't want you. Go away.
Mm. And that's when you ended up in working in the political system?
I started looking around. I negotiated an extra 3 months to look around, and I also negotiated a payout. They tried to stop that, but I managed to get friendly with the accounting department, and they made sure that I was okay. I think everybody needs to go through losing their job at some stage. It really, it's a great, you need all your skills of developing self-belief if you don't have them, and determination. And I was offered a job to work for the ABC in Darwin or the Canberra Times, subbing. And I thought, I need to learn about subbing. And I went to the Canberra Times and had a fabulous time because I was just so determined to learn how the system worked. And it was an old system. They've got a seriously computerised system now. But because I could write fast and type fast and everything, a lot of stories fairly quickly. I knew where apostrophes went, which they were a bit surprised by coming from the electronic media. I actually knew, actually had good grammar. And I was so interested in the layout and where the stories went that they actually gave me little jobs of laying out pages within 3 months instead of a year. So I was really, really keen. But then night shift gets to you after a while. And we were coming up to the 1993 election where the Hewson government was going to come in 93. And I went through the list. David Barnett had written a story in the Bulletin about the up-and-coming or the most likely to succeed Liberal front benches. And I went through the list looking at the portfolios and the personalities as described, and I ended up picking out Alexander Downer and John Howard. And John Howard had IR and Alexander Downer had defence. And I love big boys' toys, tanks and trucks and things like that. So I made an appointment with Downer, and who was incredibly shocked that an actual journalist wanted to work for the Conservatives. And so after the election, I was to be the media advisor for the defence minister in a Hewson government. So here I was on election night, 1993, at the Canberra Times, watching the result come in with responsibility. I think there must have been a few of us with responsibility for the election pages. So, you know, I was sort of gone up enough in the ranks to actually have some, not influence in the stories that went in, but, you know, part of the production process of the election pages. And there are a few journalists getting very excited and happy about the result who were quite shocked that I was feeling a bit miserable as I was watching my next career go down the drain.
Were you in the Liberal Party at any time? Did you?
No. I think I joined at one stage when I was living in Canberra. When I was working for the government in Canberra, I joined. But I didn't join when we were in opposition. And then in government, I went to work for the National Party, so I decided to let the Liberal Party membership lapse. So not a diehard party person, because as on the Conservative side, we say, well, we worked for both sides of politics, the Liberals and the Nationals. But, 1993, anyway, after 93, I ended up back night shift Canberra Times. But a few months after that, Downer was given Shadow Treasury, and he asked if I wanted to be the media advisor at about half the salary it would have been if he was in government. Drink of water.
Gotta get it. I'll pause. Yeah, yes. All right, well, Cheryl, thank you so much again for today, and I'll really look forward to an opportunity to continue looking at working for Downer and for Howard next time, and hopefully we can go into the same amount of detail and reflection. But it's been great today. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity.